How is the link from there into globalism itself? Are there overt efforts to condition people to think as global citizens and to diminish patriotism?
Sure. You have the NEA, for example, 40, 50, 60 years ago, editorializing that we need a world government. That's that sort of thing. Then you have UNESCO being set up with the first director general, Julian Huxley, saying that we'll get people conditioned to think about eugenics down the road. They're not ready now, but we'll get them to do that. And he was one of the hardcore Fabian socialists at the time. UNESCO put out a series of books called Toward World Understanding, which said you really need to play down nationalism and emphasize internationalism if we're all going to live in peace and harmony. Now, what they try to do is not a direct assault, just like Richard Gardner would say. He rode piece by piece, and Sidney Hook said by indirection. You want people to slowly adjust to this voluntarily. So what you might find internationally is that we would drastically reduce our military. That would force us to join in with these various peacekeeping efforts. And so about a year or so ago, Americans for the first time were put under foreign commanders, UN commanders. You might have an outcry against that, just like you might have people outcrying against sex ed. But very slowly, because they control the process, they will get their way. In education, you might not like a superintendent. Even if you get rid of that superintendent, the next one has to be credentialed by the same people. So they control the process. So even when you think you're succeeding because of this process control, they really have a grip on you.
That really was dramatized to me, at least, some time ago when this young airman, Michael New, was court-martialed for refusing to take a U.N. uniform. He's perfectly willing to serve whatever they want him to do, but he wanted to do an American uniform because he signed up for the Constitution, not the U.N. And he was court-martialed, discharged from the service. And we were startled by that, dramatizing it. The other thing that hit me recently as I was traveling through Europe, I discovered when you check out of a hotel, they ask your permission to deduct a dollar, add a dollar to your bill to ship to the United Nations Children's Fund. Now, I'm not against children, but I was really disturbed that it's a delete option. In other words, unless you object, they, whether it's a rent-a-car or whether it's a hotel, if you're traveling, they have a little implied voluntary tax in favor of the so-called UN Children's Fund, whatever that really is, who knows. But and I'm always fascinated how they even at Halloween tried to, you know, use this UNICEF thing, this whole tide we see in perhaps subtle ways, but it's really surprising. I'm beginning to understand why David Breese, when he wrote his book, The Seven Men Who Rule the World from Their Graves, neat little book, points out, you know, includes, of course, John Dewey as one of these guys whose really roots here underlie much of what we've been talking about. And one reason we've spent this week talking about this is to try to offset the deliberate misinformation and disinformation be promoted by not only the pagan left, but also by Christian and pseudo-Christian authors and even some ministries that are promoting falsehoods, really, among the Christian body, and in so doing also are besmirching a number of the Christian leaders. And we felt the one way to deal with all of this is to go proactive and just let's get the truth out about the background of what glibly people call the New World Order or the tide toward global governance. It goes by several labels. This is not the myth of the wacko right. This is really the agenda, previously hidden but now quite manifest, of the pagan left.
Right. And so, it's becoming interesting because as it bursts forward, and I don't know where I got this quote, but they said when the New World Order finally would make its last dash for the finish line, it would have to do so naked, because it would have to throw off all of its clothes, be seen for what it really was, and run like heck to get there before anybody tackles it. See what I'm saying?
It's right, very graphic, John.
And very graphic, and I think that's pretty much where it's at, because right now
all the Freudians that are listening audience are taking notes, John, but go ahead.
Don't tell me I'm XYZ retentive, all right? We'll do that. So anyway, earlier in the week, we talked about the three prongs of this New World Order. The term New World Order, we went through the history of that. We showed that didn't come from the right. It's been used hundreds of times by people promoting global government. There's a political arm. We dealt with education yesterday, and today I know Dr. Cuddy wanted to look at religion.
Yeah, I'd like to have you talk about that, Dennis, if you would.
Okay, a lot of times when you talk about the New World Order or something, some conspiracy going on, if it involves international bankers or whatever, the immediate term that comes up is, well, this is some sort of anti-Semitism. But actually, the leading people, if you begin a century ago, Andrew Carnegie, John D. Rockefeller, J.P. Morgan, and others, were not Jewish at all. If you think about what's going on among the power elite, it's really non-religious. There are people who claim to be of various religions, Catholics, Buddhists, whatever, who would participate among these power elite individuals. And picking up on what John said, H.G. Wells indicated that in the end, the process would be speeded up, and there would be no effective opposition prepared anywhere. People would have become gradually accustomed, sort of like the frog in the water that gets hotter and hotter. And so Wells actually said that this conspiracy, that's the term he used, would be a world religion. It would have that aspect to it. And that was in the same year, 1934, that John Dewey issued his book, A Common Faith, the year after the First Humanist Manifesto. And Dewey was saying in there that dogmatic religions like Christianity would simply have to surrender. Because if you're going to have this synthesis, not only economic synthesis of Eastern communism and Western capitalism, into a world socialism, and I think Hong Kong is their model for this, because that's what will be going on there. In religion, what would happen is a synthesis as well, so that you would only have those values that all religions could agree upon. Of course, there goes Jesus Christ out the window, because other religions don't agree on him. The idea progressed in various ways, even into the Trilateral Commission, which is an outgrowth to some extent of the Council on Foreign Relations. It was set up in 1973 by David Rockefeller, and Barry Goldwater, in his book With No Apologies, was the title, his autobiography, said that the trilateralists actually wanted not only social, economic, and political control, but they wanted ecclesiastical control as well, because in this one world that they're developing, you cannot have any people falling through the gaps. You can't have these fundamentalists, whether Christian or Islamic, creating some sort of massive opposition. Now, they try to play down religion, but they know people are interested in spirituality, so they had to give them a substitute, and that's where the New Age would come in.
Interesting. Well, you know, as you talk here, though, it fascinates me, because most of us would have assumed, as Christians, we would assume that the attacks in Christianity would come, in effect, from the pagan left. And it's fascinating to realize that among the different techniques to attack Christianity, there are attacks from the Christian left, or I really probably should almost call it the pseudo-Christian left. We have books that are being published that we view as malicious and deceitful, that besmirch the major leaders in the Christian movement, calling them anti-Semitic. They tend to lump into one bucket the extreme racists, the Christian identity types, the anti-Semitic types, and of course there's many of these groups around the country, but they lump them all together under the label of the patriots or the militia. And what shocks me, as I've watched this recently, is I see these books not only being, in our view at least, deceitful and malicious and so forth, but they are besmirching some of the most outstanding leadership in the Christian body, guys like Chuck Smith and Pat Robertson and others. And it just is startling to me to see the attack come from what I would have thought as being within the body, not from outside.
But see, I think you're bringing up a point that Dr. Cuddy could address real directly here, and that is, it's not an issue of left versus right anymore.
Exactly. Good
in other
point.
Words, in other words, as I see it, Dennis, the old debate, okay, is conservative versus liberal. I don't see that anymore. It's more socialism, and that's actually a global pantheistic socialism versus what we would call individual conscience and sovereignty. You follow my thrust in that one?
Sure. If you're trying to meld East and West so that you get Eastern mysticism accepted in the West, you dress it up in a form that's acceptable, and they would call that the New Age is one term. There are other terms for it. But in terms of confronting traditional Christians, the easiest thing, just like labeling people McCarthyist, is to label them. You know, I will label you as anti-Semitic. This is an attempt to discredit them. It's part of what you would call the divide and conquer strategy.
So why is it then we have churches now like the Cathedral of St. John the Divine in New York being a major New Age center? You're finding in a number of different denominations. It's literal infiltration. You might as well quit calling it Christian.
Right, but it's gradual, and it's like Sidney Hook said, by indirection, so that you would have the Temple of Understanding, for example, in the early 60s, it hit people of many, many faiths saying, well, this is a wonderful thing, because they talk about world peace. Isn't peace wonderful? What many of them seem to forget is that when Christ said that he was bringing peace, it was not the peace of this world. It was the peace of understanding Christ and accepting him, which was our road to salvation.
You know, there's another, we're in the religious side, but there's another side to this, too, I think that what John was getting at. We in this country, just looking at our domestic politics, think of Republican versus Democrat, not really. And I think this is where Don McElveen and others say it so well. It's Socialist Party A plus Socialist Party B. The real debate isn't between Republican and Democrat. The real debate is between the socialists, lumping those in that category, and the constitutionalists, the ones that on the one hand are pushing group things, and in contrast to us, in which we have a heritage of individual merit. On the one hand, the group people saying, you know, truth is really relative. We've got to synthesize all this, in contrast to us, in which we claim that we, our creator, underlying creator, has given us God-given rights. They're not man-given, they're God-given, and they have to pull. That's why it's becoming clear that this religious issue undergirds the whole political thing. The political agenda of going to socialism has to somehow undermine the idea that our rights are God-given, and therefore not negotiable. They have to be man-given so that they can deny them. And I think this is the other, you know, underlying dimension. John, is that fair? Or is that?
I would say it's floating that way. But, you know, Dennis, as I see it, we at one time talked about secular humanism as sort of being the bugaboo that Christians were dealing with. Over the last 10 years, I've come to aware that it's actually shifting into almost a monistic global pantheism, if that makes any sense. There's a change.
Right, that is the focus of many New Age elements, the shift from secular humanism, but that was their first tool because it had a history, and you could undermine biblical absolutes by teaching moral relativism, that there were no absolute truths, and that's why you would find people today, for example, the baby boomers and Generation X, who've been pounded with that in their schools, and so they don't see anything wrong with it if a president were to happen to have had affairs with other women beside his wife.
Well, you know, there's another side to this. John, if you're right, if there's a tide towards pantheism, if that's true, and I think it is, then we can predict the next step, because pantheism always migrates into the occult. Pantheism doesn't have any leaders. God is everywhere kind of thing. And it migrates into the occult, which, of course, has a leader who is very identifiable.
Right. There's an actual predictable step, but you have to recognize, like Dennis says, you have to recognize where you're at.
Exactly, but that's one of the reasons we've indulged in some of these materials this week and in our other publications, is because this is not just a political issue. This is an area of awareness that's essential if one is going to really understand, first of all, biblical prophecy, because the Bible has always portrayed that the world is going to migrate to a globalism and to that will eventually be taken over by a leader, a coming world leader,
right.
And there's much to be said about that.
For Christians who talk about opposing New World Order, I think, well, how did you think an Antichrist was going to get here? I mean, did you think he was going to appear on Main Street one day wearing a red suit and a tail? We have been going over all of this week, Chuck and Dennis, the history of the New World Order and the words of the people who have put it together. New World Order was a term created basically by people as a proponent of global government. It was used as late as just a few years ago, as a matter of fact, until it became actually a political liability. And on July 18th, and this was in the Los Angeles Times of 1993, Henry Kissinger was saying concerning NAFTA, what Congress will have before it is not a conventional trade agreement, but the architecture of a new international system, a first step towards a new world order. Other people say we have to let go of national sovereignty to get into this new world order. They're telling you very clearly what it is they intend to do. And it's happening. If you heard the State of the Union message, it's global this, global that. We talked earlier in the week about education, about religion, and we need to do a wrap-up on it. So, Dr. Cuddy, I'll let you lead this one.
Okay. Picking up on what you just said, there was, I think it was in 1995, September 24th, where the Washington Post itself referred to the power elite as the powers that be, the hidebound elite who run the world. They had an article in there talking about what Gorbachev was doing. Yesterday in the program, I believe Chuck and you were talking about the convergence of socialism with what was now the successor to secular humanism, a sort of pantheistic monism.
Right.
And that process also has been going on for a long time. In fact, if you look at the Wizard of Oz, the symbolism in that is that there's a god within, and you can save Mother Gaia, symbolized by Dorothy, if you use your heart and your mind and courage. That would be the Tin Man, the Scarecrow, and the Coward Cowardly Lion. And this is, in my view, this writing comes right out of the Theosophical Society, one of the biggest esoteric organizations around. And what you have in terms of socialism is it's not just the socialism of the left, like the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, but remember that Nazism really stood for National Socialism, and they were heavily into the occult. In fact, when the Russians came into Berlin at the end of the Second World War, they found 1,000 Tibetan lamas in Nazi uniforms there because one of Hitler's people had brought them from the Far East. And the gradual erosion of what I would call traditional Christianity can be seen, I suppose, by an example. If you ask people if they were familiar with the book of Revelations, they say, sure I am. If you'd ask them, would you take a number on your forehead or your hand without which you could buy or sell nothing, they would say, oh, that's the mark of the beast. Surely I wouldn't do that, you know, the Antichrist and all that. But then if you ask them, well, would you take this nice little card, this smart card with a number on it without which you couldn't buy or sell anything, I'm afraid you'd be surprised. A lot of Christians would think that was just fine.
But then what you're saying basically is that it's an ongoing process of indoctrination. If you look at the writing, say, of Dietrich Bonhoeffer during World War, prior to World War II, in which so many Lutheran and evangelical pastors in Germany fell for the Third Reich. And they, first of all, didn't believe the Nazis were going to do what they said they did. Everybody in our country now, we've had Indiana Jones and war movies out the kazoo, and we all look at Nazis as being bad, evil things. We forget that Nazi or German society embraced them to a large degree as being good.
And there were segments of the U.S. that was also supportive, too, prior to the real outbreaks.
Prior to the real outbreaks. Mm-hmm. So basically, we talked about there are churches now. If you go to certain churches, I keep thinking of St. John the Divine. There was the cathedral in Denver. They were talking about Grace Cathedral in San Francisco. And we're talking about the Episcopal Cathedral in Denver. And they're bowing to the earth there, and they bow to the east and the north and the west. It's all part of a service. This is just total infiltration. You look at Matthew Fox in the Catholic Church and his introduction of goddess worship and things of that nature. So those are the overt ones, but there's more subtle stuff.
Well, we see that going on right now. We've made reference to the fact that there's so-called people who try to masquerade as Christians publishing books to the Christian market from Christian publishers that are, clearly anti-Christian, that are besmirching. We talked about that earlier. It's interesting to see this happening. As you look at Hal Lindsey's famous book, The Road to Holocaust, points out that the Holocaust in Europe needs to be laid at the feet of the pulpits in Europe that were silent. The church got duped. I see a real analogy between the ineffectiveness of the church community in Germany during the Holocaust period, and I see the same thing happening today. There are pulpits in America where pastors are sort of arguing that our kingdom is not of this world, and almost preach an attitude of ignorance toward what's happening in this country. I'm not saying that we should go towards political activism necessarily. I'm saying that we should at least be aware of what's going on and not label people who are sounding the alarm concerning the erosion of our heritage as some kind of wacko nuts, but really one of being the watchman, if you will.
But in the light of that, though, Dennis, if we were what just Chuck said, I think the reason a lot of the inaction is taking place is a gradual process of brainwashing in the media. We can lay that one at their feet.
Sure, and you see various films. There's a good one called Question 7 that's put out, I believe, by some Lutheran organizations. It takes place after World War II when the Soviets are actually coming in, but it's the same thing Chuck was talking about. It's an award-winning film. It's very good. You also have a later film, Brotherhood of the Bell, where it's talking about how the media can be used. The person played by William Conrad in there is giving Glenn Ford a hard time, and it shows how he, as a member of the media, will try and discredit anybody talking about a sort of conspiracy. But the process started way back. Well, William Paley in 1928 was beginning CBS, and he hired as his chief advisor Edward Bernays, who was Sigmund Freud's nephew. And in that same year, Bernays authored a book called Propaganda, where he said, we in the media know how to manipulate your opinions. We form an invisible government, and he goes on and on like that, how they can do pretty much what they want. They were picking up to some extent on Antonio Gramsci. Gorbachev and his wife were disciples of Gramsci. He was a Marxist revolutionary, saying, we don't have to have a bloody revolution. We will change the consciousness by changing the culture. That way we'll undermine religion. Aldous Huxley, after he wrote Brave New World, wrote The Devils of Loudun, in which he was describing how various aspects of the media and entertainment, music and so forth, could be used to change. He said, never have so few been in a position to make criminals, maniacs of so many at one time. By use of various aspects of the media, you would have Theodore Adorno, another revolutionary, saying, well, you could do this by fractious music. He was alluding to rock music with the interim step of, rock and roll. So you'd have people, groups like The Who or Jefferson Airplane, saying, yes, this music is a great revolutionary type of music. We can create this generation gap. We can get kids away from their parents' values. Now, today, what you have in the media and entertainment, you'll see a lot of flashing images and single eyes coming at you. Your ordinary reaction to that is to turn it off. It's annoying to you. But what they found is that in the 80s, there was a principle called hyper-reality, where it's like a gunshot. You react to a gunshot by absorbing information. You're not in analytic mode. You're absorbing it. And so if they can fill 30-second spot ads with this type of hyper-reality, where you're in a sort of survival instinct, where you constantly see things that are not in your normal experience, you know, a Nike shoe or whatever swirling at you, you're absorbing rather than reflecting. And so that comes into your consciously. It doesn't make you walk out immediately like some robot and buy a Nike or whatever it is, but it's in your process, your mental faculty, and if they flash that image 10 times, there's 10 registrations in your brain of that type of thing, so that later when you are going to buy a shoe, at least Nike will be present in your mind. And so there's this hyper-reality, which follows what George Orwell had said in 1984, when the person was saying to O'Brien, Big Brother's agent, the people will never fall for this, they'll never go with this. And he said, but what if we quicken the tempo of human life? Because when they do that, you're busy. You know, I got to go to the shop, I got to go to the store, I got to go to the dentist, I got to pick up the kids, and you're so busy that you're never able to sit down and reflect on what they're doing to manipulate you.
That's interesting. You know, maybe a more prosaic example of this that shocked me is into an awareness. Wasn't that long ago, they were circulating a video called The Clinton Chronicles, which, of course, had a lot of fascinating interviews. I think most discerning people in America have seen or heard about that video. To me, the most shocking interview on that entire collection was the interview with Don Hewitt, the executive producer of 60 Minutes, where he brags on camera that they successfully withheld from the American people the truth about Clinton in order to get him through the New Hampshire primary. This is in their first election there. And it fascinated me. Here is a major executive of the media bragging that they made public opinion rather than informing it. And I think most of us that are so busy, as you just highlighted, as executives or whatever, sort of presume that the media is competitive and it's their job is to inform its public as part of its mission, and yet we find that they're really deceitfully part of the machinery to form and shape agendas rather than to report what's happening.
Yes, they'll admit that. The ombudsman for the Washington Post, Richard Harwood, actually wrote a column back in 1993 where he listed all the names of the media and press and said these people no longer report the news. They make it with the Council on Foreign Relations. He was listing the membership. And the 30s, part of this group, Cecil Rhodes' followers, said in a book about the London Times, it says they have this meeting in All Souls College or so forth at Oxford, and they decide what you do not hear. It's not just what they tell you, it's what they decide to keep from you. And in terms of music, Bertrand Russell wrote how you could have verses repeatedly intoned was a good conditioning aspect. So now, unlike the 40s and 50s where you would have a song, you could actually hear the lyrics, it delivered a message, you keep hearing this beat over and over again and the same words repeated over and over again. That's a conditioning tool.
It's like a mantra in essence is what
sure.
It is. Tell you what, we are totally out of time for this week, Dr. Cuddy. Thank you for being on Chuck's show here.
Thank you for having me.
And Dr. Cuddy's books are available from the Florida Pro Family Forum. They are at P.O. Box 105 Highland City, Florida, H-I-G-H-L-A-N-D, City, Florida, 33846. His most outstanding works here are The Road to Socialism and The New World Order. The secret records revealed the men, the money, and the methods behind the New World Order. He also has done the history of education in quotable quotes. These are nothing but quotes from the people who have determined American education from the turn of the century in their words. It gives you a very clear insight as to why we are where we are. In his latest book out now, Conspiracy, Secret Records Revealed, Convincing Evidence for Those in Pursuit of the Truth.